Iowa's cultural and economic shift away from the family farm has created serious challenges in our state. It has also created opportunities for reinvention and creativity. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're in the midst of the first annual Creative Week being held in the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area. This hour, I'll talk with Amanda Styron, organizer of Creative Week, about how creativity and creative people influence our communities and our economy. I'll also talk with Leanne Jacobson of Startup City Spencer and Josh Garrett, president of the Neighborhood Association of the Historic East Village in Des Moines. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're going to talk about creativity and what it means for our communities and our economy. We're in the midst of the first annual Creative Week being held in the Creative Corridor that includes Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, and surrounding areas, including seven counties. Later in the hour, I'll talk with Leanne Jacobson of Startup City Spencer about the exciting changes taking place in that community. And Josh Garrett will be here. He's president of the Neighborhood Association of the Historic East Village in Des Moines. He'll talk with us about how creativity has transformed Des Moines in recent years. But first, Amanda Styron is here. She is CEO of Seed Here Studio and one of the organizers of Creative Week. Hello, Amanda.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And first, let's start with what is Creative Week?
Absolutely. Creative Week is a seven-day festival of events around the Creative Corridor, like you said, seven counties, 7 days, one epic celebration of everything that we create here in this region.
All right. And I know that in your past, you have worked with Richard Florida in New York City. And Richard Florida, of course, wrote the book, The Creative Class, that really transformed the way a lot of us think about creativity in a community and what it can do for our communities. And he's written many other books and worked on actually helping communities put his ideas into practice. And you were involved in that as well. In coming back to Iowa, and I know that you seem to keep being drawn back to the state of Iowa, were you worried that you wouldn't be able to put some of those ideas into practice in your life here in Iowa?
Somewhat, but I was really lucky that when I was at the University of Iowa here, I was able to meet up with a group of friends that were really interested in making ideas happen and help young people make them happen. And so we started a nonprofit that's based in Iowa City called the James Gang. And through that, we made a lot of our own ideas happen, and we helped a lot of other young people do that. And in the process, we met a lot of leaders around the state of Iowa, and especially in this area, who were so supportive of what we wanted to do and helped us do it. That is really why I ended up working with Richard Florida and going to the East Coast, because of what I was able to build here, because of the support network here. And so coming back, I was sure that I knew personally that you can make big ideas happen here and you can be creative here. What I wasn't sure is if you could do that outside of the university community, because I was here as a part of the university. So it's been amazing to come back and find the creative community that surrounds the university and includes the university, but you don't have to be a student in order to pursue those creative ideas, which was my big question.
Well, and a lot of people who grow up in Iowa spend a lot of time thinking about moving elsewhere. And a lot of people who want to be in creative fields think that they have to go to New York City or San Francisco or Los Angeles or Silicon Valley. But that seems to be shifting, at least in a small way. Are you finding with the young people that you know, and you are certainly in that category of young people, do you find people feeling more positive about staying in Iowa and building a life here?
I do. I know many people, well over 100 people who are under 40, who find great meaning in being here, being a part of this community and growing their business and their family and their community projects here. And I do think that there are certain industries where it is super beneficial to go to the hub for that. But for a lot of our friends who are not here but are from Iowa, when we go visit them, we find that they are looking at what we're doing with envy because they're not able to pursue as many ideas, do as much, be as creative because there's so many constraints financially and time-wise in these bigger cities unless you're in a certain, a very specific spot. And so we're actually able to live, I think, much more fulfilled creative lives here just because we have more room to do it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the definition of creativity because it's such a big word and it encompasses so much. When you're talking about creativity and creative fields, what kinds of things are you talking about?
In the most general sense, I am always referring to just bringing something new into the world that didn't, what that wasn't there before. So really that could be anything from a scalable tech startup to a coffee shop to a volunteer community project, anything that you think would make the world a better place that's not here right now, or a solution that we could bring to make the world better. That's what I mean by creative. Creativity is really the act of creating something new. And that's where the value, new value comes into the world through that process. So that's what we're referring to. And we believe deeply that no matter what you are creating, you are going through a process that is very similar and universal to somebody else who may be in a different industry, different generation, different sector. But we're all going through this process, which is a painful process of bringing something into the world that wasn't there before.
Now, I can see in our society and historically, you know, when we talk about tech startups or we talk about opening a new business or you talk about creating a nonprofit, these are different sectors and these people wouldn't necessarily have a reason to come together. What is the incentive for somebody who is working on designing apps to sit down with somebody who wants to create a nonprofit?
I mean, there's I guess what I would say is that a definition we use often is creativity is the synthesis of diverse elements. It's when those different people, different ideas, different perspectives come together. That's when real breakthroughs happen. So that's the benefit. And one of the things I love about Iowa, and I'm sure it's true everywhere, but I just find it all the time here, that you never know who you're going to meet. And when even when you meet them, you don't really know what they have for you, but there's a connection, there's a resource, there's an idea that they have, something that they know that you would never know because of your circle and kind of the area that you go in. And so having somebody else come from a different spot and be able to talk to you about your idea, you just don't know where that's going to take you. And sometimes it doesn't take you anywhere, and sometimes it just takes you beyond your wildest expectations.
Now, with all of the kinds of technology that we have available to us today, the actual physical location of where you are is supposed to be significantly less important. But what I'm hearing you say is we need people. We need a community.
Absolutely. And this is something that Richard Flores says as well, that you can be anywhere for technology, but in order to create at the level that you want to, you really have to be surrounded by supporters, a network, resources. Once you have something in the world, how do you get it out to everyone else? You've got to have distribution opportunities, communication channels. So my personal take on it is that you can live in unexpected places and create if you have a local support network and you can connect to the innovation hubs around the country and really around the world.
Now, you mentioned, of course, that you went to the University of Iowa, and Iowa City has always been considered to be a creative community. This creative corridor that we're talking about, though, includes a lot of communities that have not historically been thought of as creative communities, and Cedar Rapids is a big example of that. The creative corridor idea has been around for, what, about 5 years? What did that come out of?
It came out of the flood, really. We had a number of thought leaders from around the country come here right after the flood and talk with us about what to do now, especially Cedar Rapids having their central business district totally underwater, 10 feet of water. There was a real opportunity that these thought leaders pointed out to us. They said, you can build a city of the future. You have a clean slate, and that's the silver lining of this disaster. So build for the future, build for a creative city. And
They also told us two things that I think are really hard to hear, but we've really taken to heart, and it's the heart of the Creative Corridor project, is that they said, you know what, you have all of the assets, everything that you need to be one of the best places in the world, but you're not that, and you're not known as that because you don't work together well, and you don't celebrate what you have here. And so a number of community leaders around the region, including Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, North Liberty, Coralville, Washington, Anamosa, they got together and they said, let's take this to heart. And so in looking at how do you bring people together to work together and celebrate what we have, first we need a shared identity. And so they went through a process to discover that Iowa's Creative Corridor was well representative of this area, that we have a natural labor shed here and a natural economy between Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, and all the surrounding areas. People are living in one place, traveling, working in another, shopping in another, that makes a regional economy. And that then with the Creative Corridor project, we can put things together like Creative Week that a lot of people can work on them together, collaborate, and really celebrate what we have here. So all of this has come from taking those ideas to heart and let's make a change. Let's make it better.
Now, of course, this is a long process, and I'm sure that there are people listening today who live in the Creative Corridor who are surprised to learn that they are members of this Creative Corridor. Can you give me an example of something that has come out of these ideas and this movement that you feel is emblematic of what you want to see more of?
Absolutely. One of my favorite things is just because I lived in Iowa City and then I lived in Cedar Rapids for a couple of years. And so I've met people around the region and I've visited every county in the region and toured and I've seen amazing things. So some of my favorite moments are when I know different people and I get to see them meet each other and then they start working together. Their families start hanging out together and those connections happen. So that's been one of my very favorite things to see. And then new collaborations coming out of people meeting each other. You mentioned if somebody's interested in apps and that somebody else is interested in nonprofits. Well, I actually saw that in person where an app developer I know just built the new Cultural Corridor Alliance's calendar app. I got to witness that. And so those are some of my favorite things. And I think that Creative Week itself has been really neat to come together because there are over 200 organizations that are participating in one way or another. And so just to have that kind of collaborative initiative and effort that really is open to everyone is really exciting. So we'll see what comes out of it.
We're talking about creativity today. My guest right now is Amanda Styron. She is CEO of Seed Here Studio and one of the organizers of Creative Week right now. The first annual Creative Week is going on. You can find a link to their website on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with Leanne Jacobson of Startup City Spencer and Josh Garrett, who is president of the Neighborhood Association of the Historic East Village in Des Moines. And you are welcome to join our conversation as well. How do you see creativity at work in your community? Give us a call at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about creativity, and we're in the midst of the very first annual, perhaps Creative Week, taking place in the Creative Corridor, which involves Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, and seven surrounding counties. And we're going to talk with other people who are involved in creative work around the state. We also want to hear from you. What kinds of creative innovations are you seeing in your community? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can post on our Facebook page as well. With me is Amanda Styron. She is CEO of Seed Here Studio and one of the organizers of Creative Week. And joining us now is Leanne Jacobson. And Leanne lives in a community that's gotten a lot of attention for reinvention in recent years, Spencer, Iowa. She's also the president of the Technology Association of Iowa and principal at Startup City Spencer. Hello, Leanne.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, my goodness. It's fabulous to be here.
And can you, for people who aren't familiar with what's going on in Spencer, Iowa, which was recently named one of the Blue Zones, but
yeah,
even before that was getting attention for really being a rural community that that is making something exciting happen. What kinds of changes have you seen in Spencer?
Charity, I was really fortunate to move to Spencer about 2.5 years ago. And there's been so much work done previous that's now all coming to fruition. But the Blue Zone was a huge recognition of a lot of the energy from individuals. That's a lot of grassroots as well as leadership from the business community. We have seen the Blue Zones, the arts and culture that are thriving in the area, as well as a lot of the new businesses that are coming from the manufacturing and agriculture sectors. And then we're building on that, my husband and I have launched a couple initiatives, including Startup City Spencer, that really helps diversify the opportunities for people who want to grow their businesses in the community, as well as, you know, other things that are, you know, that may apply more to the after work sort of life to make things a little more fun and interesting in town.
Well, and Startup City Spencer is similar to Startup City Des Moines, but tell us a little bit about how that idea functions.
That Startup City Spencer is an accelerator and co-working space for creatives. And Amanda did such a beautiful job articulating why that is so important. But especially in rural areas where you have, you know, traditional businesses that are really strong and, you know, fueling the economy, it's important also to build for the 21st century. And a lot of that, through my job as the Technology Association, which I've had the privilege of serving for a number of years, I've got to see the innovation that occurs from border to border in Iowa. And there are brilliant people doing brilliant things everywhere. And geography doesn't create an exception. And so if we could, the idea behind Startup City Spencer was to put a support structure in place in Northwest Iowa, so when people did have an idea, or somebody did want to move back and start a business, or grow their business, we could provide the network and community of support in a facility. It takes after the Startup City Des Moines model. The co-founders there have been so helpful in sharing their secret sauce and successes. So what we've got is a facility where entrepreneurs and creatives can come together and collaborate and work together and feed off each other. And it's in a supportive network that is also very mentor-centric. And we've just recently done the ribbon cutting, but are building a very strong support network of mentors that can then help those people with their businesses and ideas and growing them.
Well, and I know things are really just getting off the ground, but for people who hear about these ideas and think, I don't really get that. Can you give me an example of what a day would be like at Startup City Spencer? And maybe if things aren't quite to this point yet, maybe you can imagine what a day would be like.
Well, you know, ideally in a year when you ask me what a day will be like, I think we'll be there. It's going to take a while to grow. But there are a lot of people with ideas and business ideas and solutions, and they know pain points in their lives, and they've thought of the solutions to those. And so, you know, there are business ideas. Within Startup City, you'll see CEOs of these companies that are starting, that are very young, working together, and they may be technology-based, they may likely be technology-based, but they will be creative, they will be solving problems to challenges and issues in our community, they will be bringing something new into the world, as Amanda so well articulated. And you'll have the co-working space, the peer-to-peer networking and horizontal learning, because these companies will be growing at about the same time and they can learn from each other. We'll have mentors dropping in to help them, you know, bounce ideas off if they have a legal issue or a marketing issue or something like that. We can bring in the experts that can help them continue to move their companies forward. There will be the lunch and learns and the opportunity for education for entrepreneurs in general. It'll be a lot of activity, a lot of energy, very high energy, very creative energy, and connecting people, being a room, a community in a room, I guess, would be one way to kind of envision it.
All right. And I'm curious, from your impression, you know, I have driven around a lot of Western Iowa communities, a lot of rural communities in the state, and there are some communities that are doing well, but many communities really saw their downtowns gutted in the 1980s and haven't been able to bounce back from that as more and more family farms have disappeared and more businesses in small downtowns have not been able to make it. People are driving farther. People are moving away. What makes Spencer different?
Boy, you know, when you describe those communities, I think of Spencer as the opposite. It is a beautiful community, and the citizens take such pride in living in such a wonderful community. I think it's got a tremendous business environment where the businesses really develop and reinvest into the community. If somebody has a good idea, it's people are not afraid to jump in and help those ideas come to fruition. It's just an amazing community to live in, and really a gem in the state. And I think because of the reinvestment, because whether it's the storefronts or the high-speed broadband in the streets, this community is very vibrant and it is very poised. A community as itself and as part of the Great Lakes region, you look at the neighboring communities of Milford and Okoboji and the Great Lakes and the trails and the, you know, it just, you package it all together and it becomes a very powerful way of life, and welcome to many people.
We're talking this hour about creativity. With me is Leanne Jacobson. She lives in Spencer, Iowa. She's the president of the Technology Association of Iowa and principal at Startup City Spencer. Also with me, Amanda Styron. She is CEO of Seed Here Studio and one of the organizers of Creative Week going on right now in the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area. And now I want to bring Josh Garrett into the conversation. And he lives in a community that, of course, has gotten a lot of attention for reinvention over the past couple of decades. He is president of the Neighborhood Association of the Historic East Village in Des Moines. He's also the owner of Jet and Monkey's Dog Shop, which, in full disclosure, is also an underwriter of Iowa Public Radio. Hello, Josh.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yes, it's been a great conversation so far. I've absolutely loved it. And I mean, East Village is really one of those very special places where ideas do get off the ground and you actually do see them come to fruition. And a lot of the best ones stay around for years.
Well, and you know, I'm thinking back 20, 25 years ago when I was young in Iowa, and Des Moines was not a particularly cool community. And there were a lot of young people who were leaving Des Moines, but there has been this a couple of decades long transformation in Des Moines where the city's really gone from being a place that people wanted to leave and a butt of jokes on late night talk shows to being ranked by all kinds of different organizations as one of the best places to live and work in the United States. So I know we can't sum up entirely, but from your view from the East Village, what went right early on in this transformation and what makes Des Moines so dynamic?
I really think it's the collaboration between the public and the private sectors that have come together. And it did start probably 15 years ago for the East Village when Gundolison's had come in and looked at visioning for this downtown area. They looked at Gateway West and then, you know, this Eastern Gateway project. And that was in the 1990s, and I remember reading it in the paper. I mean, I was young, but and then they came in, and the city had done the streetscape project on Locust, but there were things happening right before that too. So you had Project Contemporary Furniture come in and open up a showroom on the corner in the Teach-Out building, and I remember. I mean, I was like 20 when that happened, but they really showed like what you could do in these urban spaces, and it wasn't cool to be urban at that time. And I think you know, you start with one and you just keep going, and of course there's also some great longtime businesses that are still there that still contribute tremendously to the neighborhood. But the neat thing about it is it happened organically, and every one of these business owners and residents as well who have come in and been an urban pioneer in the heart of our district, I mean, we all contribute in a way that, you know, to better the community. And we really take a lot of great pride in our community. But also the people that visit our community and come from the outside also have found it's just this, I don't know, there's something special about it that really attracts creative types, and it creates or and it attracts the community to want to be there.
Well, and Amanda, maybe you can give us your, since you've done this professionally, looked at creative communities or communities that wanted to be creative around the country in your work with Richard Florida. Looking at Des Moines, okay, it happened organically, but I would guess every community that has used these ideas successfully, people within the community would say, well, this happened very organically. But what happened in Des Moines that made this work, Amanda?
From my perspective, and I certainly wasn't there, but I've been watching and loving seeing it grow as well. So the thing about the organic and authentic growth, I think, is so key. I've watched a number of people in community say, okay, we're going to be creative. And it's very top down, and it doesn't really allow for the creative passion of the people to come together and put things together and make ideas happen within the spaces that are there. And I think that the East Village is a really nice example of the space is there, and you come in and you create what you want to have here, and it becomes a very eclectic, really interesting neighborhood to be in, and you just want to spend time walking around and seeing, and then you get your own ideas, and then you see a space that could be yours, and you, or you jump in on a project or those sort of things. And so I think Des Moines has done a really nice job of letting the community own the work, but creating the framework from that visioning process going forward that a lot gave people a way in, but then let them do the magic.
And Leanne, do you have anything to add on that from your observations?
Well, going back to the time when very much articulated before, but about 15 years ago, moving to Des Moines at that time from the Twin Cities, and I was looking for young people on the streets, and they weren't anywhere visible. and so back then, I think of a story often, and I tell it, and I had the opportunity to have a business that helped put the groundwork in for Bravo Des Moines, Greater Des Moines, and talk to a lot of city leaders. One of those was Harry Bookie, who is a great developer and did so much for our community. One of Harry's, and to sort of paraphrase, is his idea of economic growth was that young people want to be where they can find a date. And so he did some things early on, I think, that with this vision of creating a very vibrant community where young people could find a date. But the Temple for the Performing Arts seems to be on the western part of town, a nice example of back at that 10, 15 years ago, standing up to planners and saying, you know, this is a gem of a building. Let's do something with it. And he did. He put Centro in there, which, you know, you went in there and you said, oh, my goodness, I could be in New York at this moment. And then there was the community's first Starbucks. But it really showed, I think, the community what we could be. We could be really something. And I think it inspired other people to start their own, moving forward their own ideas, you know, because we could be that kind of a place. And so along with a lot of going way back, it just seems that that was kind of a game changer too.
And that happened in the East Village as well, around the same time frame with, I don't know if anyone knows where, like, Ami and Blazing Saddle, that whole block, they were going to tear it all down, and which Betts Hardware was torn down, and that's where the Soho building went. But they were planning on taking out the rest, and those property owners really stood up to the city and said, these are, I mean, they have historical integrity.
Sure.
They need to stay, and I can't imagine the East Village without those buildings that were built in late 1800s. So, I mean, I think it does take a community to stand up and, you know, for the right thing, and it really makes a big difference long term. And so, I mean, that's definitely a big part of it from back then.
Well, and Leanne, your definition is so wonderful. Well, young people can find a date. I mean, in the East Village, that there are so many shopping districts in the nation where things close at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and then there's nowhere else to be. And in the East Village, that is not the case. I mean, there is a dynamic where you can go, you can shop, you have places to be.
Oh, exactly. And like, I don't know if you heard, but we had the state's first barcade open. And people are so excited about that. I mean,
what is that?
Okay, so basically for us kids that, or for us that were growing up in the 80s and 90s, remember the old arcade games?
Yes.
Like Miss Pac-Man? And they were actually the big, you know, not a Nintendo, but, you know, you're going
the
to
big
an
arcade. Console.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're on the corner of in the basement of the Teach Out building, there's a new place that opened called Up Down. And you can go down. There is full, probably, I don't know, probably 70 different games in there, from skee ball to pinball machines. And it's a quarter. And like Mike Tyson's Punch Out, like all these old games, like from when we were kids. But it's, but you can get local brewery beer there. You can, I mean, it's just a great time. And so people have been just flocking to this thing, and it's just like Zombie Burger and like all these little like neat ideas that people dreamt up, and then boom, they become this huge success. And in our neighborhood, it's just, we have several, I mean, some of the best ones in town, definitely. So and that's a, I mean, that one a lot of people haven't even heard about yet, but I hope they do, because it's really a cool little venue.
Well, so. I probably would have never met my husband if there had been a barcade, because he would have been there. And
well, ladies know where to go. So.
Right. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about creativity and what it can do, how it can influence our communities, how it can influence our economy, and we'd love to hear from you. Join the conversation at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Josh Garrett is with me of Des Moines. Leanne Jacobson of Spencer, and Amanda Styron is here as well. She is one of the organizers of Creative Week in the Cedar Rapids and Iowa City area. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about creativity and how creativity can influence our communities and our economy. What makes a community creative? What fosters these ideas? We'd love to get your input at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. or post on our Facebook page. With me, Amanda Styron. She is CEO of Seed Here Studio and one of the organizers of Creative Week in the Creative Corridor that includes Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, 7 counties in this area. Also, Leanne Jacobson is here. She lives in Spencer, Iowa, and is the president of the Technology Association of Iowa and principal at Startup City Spencer. And Josh Garrett, president of the Neighborhood Association of the Historic East Village in Des Moines. He's also the owner of Jet and Monkey's Dog Shop in the East Village. And we have this comment from Ed. He says, the bike and walking trails around central Iowa are starting to become a destination for cool people around the Midwest. Business is now taking notice of the opportunity and making some investments. Biking and walking also can't help but lower healthcare costs as they increase the quality of life for us that use them. And Amanda, that kind of infrastructure does seem to be really important. And we saw that transformation in Des Moines. We've certainly seen that transformation in Cedar Falls and Waterloo. How important is that kind of infrastructure for making this stuff happen?
I think that it's really important, and it is infrastructure. It's the things that surround you so that you can really just live the life that you want to live. And being outside is part of what we need, and we need beautiful places to be able to experience and just have quiet moments and be outside and be healthy, and all of those things come together with a network that helps you build out your ideas and good places for your family. And to be, all of those things add up to really amazing places to live. And that's what attracts people. We all have the option to go to the best city for us. And so if we can get the equation of all of those things going together, then we can be a part of that decision.
So when you mentioned earlier that a lot of the top-down ideas don't seem to take and catch fire the way that bottom-up ideas. But that seems like a kind of policy and a top-down idea that really can change a community.
I think it, yeah, absolutely. There are important roles for government officials, community leaders in making those things. But I think across the board, we're seeing that top-down in general isn't a way of life anymore. We're much more networked. We're much more collaborative. Everybody needs to have a voice in what's happening. And so you want to put those trails where people want them. You want to build not tear down the buildings that mean something to us. And so as those leaders are making those infrastructure decisions, there does need to be a constructive conversation with the community about it to make sure that the right things are being preserved and the right spaces are being created.
Well, let's talk about money, because, of course, money is a big factor in things like this. I mean, Josh, if I went to a bank in 1990 and said I want to open a barcade in the East Village, I'm guessing that I would have gotten a lot of blank stares and a lot of, you know what, maybe try somewhere else. So how important is it to have people who are willing to fund this kind of stuff? What kind of dynamic have you seen with that in Des Moines, Josh?
Well, and that's something we're working on right now, actually. You know, we're looking to, we want to go to the next level as a neighborhood. And like the walkability thing we were just talking about is a big part of that. And with that, the funding for these things, I mean, we have memberships, which we're actually in the midst of having to increase for businesses, because we did research and we found out that we are doing a lot, and so and we're looking forward to doing more. And these volunteers, and I think it's really, you know, these volunteers are willing to step up and do a lot of the work to help it grow. But we do get to a point where some things just need to be done professionally, and they need to, you know, we need to go out and find outside funding for those things. And so we've been targeting more grants lately. And also, the great thing about Des Moines is that our leaders are accessible, where in like Chicago and places like that, I mean, I can't just go up to the mayor and go, hey, you know, can I tell you about an idea? In Des Moines, I can do that and go right up to Mayor County. And I have. And I think that that's one of the great things about the city and probably the state in general, is our leaders are accessible, and it's not just elected, it's also the private leaders as well. So, so that's like for us, you know, we're in the process of talking to all the major stakeholders in our neighborhood to start really pushing like a new marketing initiative and new, we're actually looking at adding directories onto the blank spaces within our neighborhood to help direct people when, you know, when they're walking around. So, and, you know, it is a, like for someone who, if you don't know a lot of people, it is kind of overwhelming at first. But the thing I found is everyone is, I mean, I don't know, I really have had a good experience working with other people. And I think those collaborations really, and building those relationships, are essential for these neighborhoods and our communities.
Well, and Leanne, I mean, let's talk about in Spencer, Iowa. There must have been a few very visionary people who worked at banks in that community, people who were willing to make these investments.
You know, absolutely, Charity. It was such a beautiful example of public-private collaboration. One of our first champions and cheerleaders was Bob Fagan, who's the city manager up there. And he, just through his vision and his passion for the community, helped us, you know, get traction. And then the business community came in and supported it. It is just a fabulous story of what happens when you get all the community leaders on a public and private from both perspectives working together towards a common vision. And I think that's happened in Des Moines, and it's certainly happened post-floods and previous as well in the eastern corridor. So, but yeah, it is that combination. It is that community of support coming together from both the top who can help fund and make these things happen. In Spencer, and for Startup City Spencer, it is the city and the banks and the hospital and the utility that came together to provide funding for Startup City for 5 years. So that the entrepreneurs who want to come in, you know, you're already taking quite a bit of risk in starting your own business. Those people can come in at no cost because the leaders in the city have thought this is important for our area, and we're going to, you know, do what we can to make it happen.
Well, and I'm guessing that almost ironically, I mean, the floods of 2008 probably made money flow a little more freely in this cultural corridor, Amanda.
It's been really amazing to see just the public funds alone. There's been well over $1 billion in investment, and that's before you get to the private sector.
And that, I believe that's only in Cedar Rapids. That's not even the entire corridor. So it's really amazing that the opportunities that we have with funding. But there have been a lot of visionaries here, similar to in Spencer, both in the public sector and the private sector, who have stepped up and said, let's do this together. Let's really build a city for the future. And we'll put our dollars behind it in a way that banks often can't. But there are some local banks that also have stepped up and been willing to take that risk and to make the investment in the community.
Dave is on the line in Norwalk at 866-780-9100. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for taking my call. I think one of the obvious things that maybe got missed is the cost of living here. I've lived in I'm a writer, and I've lived in New York City and Los Angeles and Boston. And for a third of the amount of money that I was paying to rent an apartment in Brooklyn, New York, I can buy a house here in Iowa, and my kids go to good schools, and it's, you know, I don't have to worry about getting a gun stuck in my neck when I walk out my door. And right. I think it's awesome.
Well, Dave, you know, Dave, just before you go, that's not a new thing about Iowa, although it seems to be a secret that we all know because we live here, right? But so was there something that sold you on the idea of moving to Iowa or back to Iowa?
Well, sure. My wife was from here, and I fought the idea kicking and screaming, Charity. It's like, Iowa? Why in the heck would I come to Iowa? What? Don't they, like, eat grizzly bears there or something? And it turns out that there's just this wonderful people, and, you know, my kids are matriculating into school, and I'm going to the PTA meetings, and life moves on, and it's a wonderful life.
So are you telling friends, you know what, you should check
no,
this out?
No.
No, so you're keeping it a secret. There we go.
Stay away. You know, like what happened in California when everybody moved to Oregon. Like, stay away. We don't want you.
All right, Dave. Thanks so much for your call. And, you know, Josh, I do wonder about that because, of course, Des Moines has gotten to be very cool. And, you know, the storefronts are full. It's harder to start a business. It's harder to rent an apartment. It costs more money to rent an apartment.
And it's just, where do you rent one? And so, I mean, like, that's one thing we were just talking about. Like, in East Village, I think we have a couple spaces that are, you know, they're being selective on who goes in there now. And that's pretty much it for the entire neighborhood. And so, I mean, for retail or a restaurant space. And so, so the only way next is to start increasing the new buildings have to be built. And so we do have one going up now. So at East 4th and Locust in the heart of the East Village. And it's an innovative modern building. And so I'm really excited to see that added, and new residential units will be in there too. But it's all a downtown too. I mean, I actually just moved to the other side of the river 9 months ago. And wondering why I didn't do it 5 years ago, because I absolutely love it, but because I can walk to work and all that stuff too with the dogs. And but on that side of the road, or I mean just downtown in general, as soon as these buildings open, they're 100% leased, and so people want to be in this area. And it's just from what I've been told, the interest for development in Des Moines has never been higher. I mean, there's so much coming, and we haven't seen anything.
Amanda, maybe you can give us some insight on this as well. When this idea works, when it works like it's been working in Des Moines, how do you perpetuate a creative culture when it becomes too expensive for people to buy in, and it's not as open to new ideas, and it's a little more, I mean, we're not Chicago, but it's a little more like Chicago.
I mean, yeah. So there's going to be cycles, and we see this. You see this in New York, is like just borough and neighborhood after neighborhood becomes the next cool place, and it's always on the edge. And I think there will continue to be that cycle. But we have something here special in the Midwest, and I think especially in Iowa, where we're very equal. A lot of equality here, where everybody's sort of welcome in a really sincere way, and you can work off of your own merits. And it's really not
as competitive or as much of a social class situation that I see in bigger cities. So if we can hold on to that, and I think that's a question that we haven't answered yet, and we don't know. We're moving into
We've been Iowa there. Nice for a long time.
Right.
I hope we can hold on to that.
I think that we – I believe that we can, but that's – to me, that's about holding on to really the soul of our cities. We're not trying to be Chicago. We're not trying to be New York. We're trying to be us and be the best us, and more people will continue to hear about it. But if we can just hold on to who we are and stay focused on what we want for our state and our community, and I think we do want to stay true to who we are in that sense of equality, then we'll be able to figure it out. But a lot of that's exciting. We don't know yet what it looks like once everybody knows that we're awesome.
Well, we are.
We know we are. Yeah.
I'm curious, too, because we don't have a huge population, we haven't seen the kind of urban sprawl that a lot of other urban centers around the nation have seen, and then that hollowing out of the middle. And Des Moines was experiencing that, has counteracted that, has a vibrant downtown community now. But how do we guard against that happening as we grow and people have to move further out, and then the middle suddenly gets a little hollow?
I think it goes back again to not trying to be that big traditional industrial city, but really being the place that we are. Part of our value is the rural opportunities to live in a house on an acreage, to be able to go kind of anywhere that you want to go, to an urban space, go to a rural space, and then back again in 20 minutes. That's sort of the beauty of it. So we may see that kind of building in and out and hollowing and those sort of things, but I don't really think so. I don't think that's us, and I don't know that that's the time we lived in. That's really the way that cities have been before, but we're really entering a whole different way of societies and cities shaping themselves.
And if I can make a quick note there, yeah. Too, also, I also think it's really important for the state of Iowa to have an urban space where these kids, when they're graduating from college, they're going to say, no, I'm going to Des Moines over Chicago or something like that. And that's something like Iowa City, I think, has that experience as well. And but all of our major cities can have that experience. And so, and I think like places like these Village and the downtown area of Des Moines, they're really bringing that to the state, and which is attracting these residents that otherwise may have laughed about, you know, coming to Iowa.
Right.
But once they see it, they're like, oh, it's not, you know, they have these things. And so,
well, if David Byrne thinks we're cool, then
I know. But I think it's really important for an economic development standpoint to make sure we have an urban environment in addition to these suburban and rural environments. And mm-hmm. And which is something I hope these Village and downtown Des Moines will offer.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much.
Josh Garrett is president of the Neighborhood Association of the Historic East Village in Des Moines, also the owner of Jet and Monkey's Dog Shop. And Leanne Jacobson, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Leanne Jacobson is the president of the Technology Association of Iowa and principal at Startup City Spencer, and she will be presenting at Creative Week tomorrow at an event in Coralville, at the Marriott in Coralville, Pitch and Grow 15. And Amanda, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was wonderful to talk with you all.
Amanda Styron is CEO of Seed Here Studio and one of the organizers of Creative Week. And again, you can find a link to what's going on during Creative Week on our Facebook page. And there are a whole lot of things still happening yet this week. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from John Pemble. And here with me in the studio is Ben Kiefer, host of River to River. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Charity. I want to give you a quote. Nobody's madder than me that the website's not working like it should, and that means it's going to be fixed.
President Obama,
you got it. I didn't even have to ask. That's the quote of the week so far. As far as I'm concerned, we're going to be talking about what it will mean to fix that website with a couple of computer scientists, one from ISU, one from the University of Iowa, and continue our conversation about this new thing, the Affordable Care Act. We want to invite listeners to call in with questions, especially if they've tried to enroll online. That's over the noon hour, Charity.
All right, sounds great. Ben Kiefer, host of River to River, coming up today at noon. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, the life of Johnny Carson, native son, as told by his friend and attorney Henry Bushkin. This is Talk of Iowa.